Chapter 6, Mark 9.38.01.
"Here they come!"
cries a Rook Serotid. The word-bearers charge out of the fog, their huge red figures dwarfing their cultist troops. They drive the ragged Brotherhood warriors ahead of them like packs of dogs into the onslaught of the palace guns. They use the cultists as shields.
"Meet them! Deny them!" Ventanus orders.
At last he fires his bolt gun. Along the line of the walls and the gate, bolters open up, jagging, jumping and crackling with muzzle flash. Heavier legion weapons join in. Autocannons, las cannons, the precious instruments they're reserved for this moment. The firepower slaps into the enemy charge, properly hurting it, slowing it, breaking it. Thousands of separate explosions and blasts tear men apart or throw them into the air. Tracer-bright streaks of las and plasma stitch across the enemy line. Black-robed humans are mown down. Ventanus smiles under his helm as he sees crimson-armoured figures shudder and fall amongst them. But there is an inevitable balance. Because it is finally time to utilise the Legion-issue weapons, it is also time to suffer equivalent wrath. The assaulting word-bearers open fire with bolters and heavy cannons, supplementing the light infantry weapons of the chanting brotherhoods. Mass reactive shells punch into the walls, scattering large chunks of stone, and rip into the gate. The loyalist forces start taking much heavier casualties. Loyalist, Ventanus thinks. How bitterly natural was it to arrive at that name? Crimson shapes, fast as darts, loft out of the fog bank. Assault squads. Shock troops launching on jump packs. They come thundering in like missiles, clearing the broad ditch, plunging down onto the defences. Their attack leapfrogs the main assaulting host. They arrive killing, armed with bolters and chain blades, reaping the army troops like ripe crops. Angry, whining, chain swords rip screaming men apart, making red ribbons of flesh, hurling matted body parts into the air.
"Drive them off the walls!" Ventanus yells.
Aruk opens fire, spearing one word-bearer's assaulter out of the air with a surgical intercept shot. The word-bearer veers away on a twisting plume of black smoke. Four of them land on their feet at the head of the bridge in front of the gate. They hack and shoot their way into the dug-in army fire teams. The chain blades score through sandbags, through cannon barrels, through shielding, through flesh, through bone. The strangled, oddly modulated shrieks of the army troopers, unable to defend themselves, mark the savage progress of the word-bearers. Ventanus bounds forward, Grievous at his side. They reach the defensive line under the gate, where the ground flows with a preposterous spreading quantity of blood. There's a pulsing pressure to it, a flow driven by the scampering hearts of men who bleed out through unimaginable wounds. Streams spray and gurgle along the gutters of the bridge, gutters designed to handle rainfall. The torrents void into the ditch below like rusty water from iron pipework. Ventanus reaches one of the word-bearers while he is busy disarticulating an army corporal. Ventanus catches the traitor under the chin of the helm with the thrusting wings of the standard. He drives him backwards and then blasts him in the torso point-blank with his bolt gun. The shot augers clean through the word-bearer and his jump pack in a violent belch of flames and sparks. The assault marine falls but grabs the thrusting standard as he collapses, dragging it out of Ventanus's grip. Ventanus doesn't have time to recover it. Still firing with his right hand, he draws his power sword underhand with his left and then rotates the freed blade in a semicircle, catching it full grip. Grievous has engaged the second of the jump infantry warriors, swinging his power fist to meet the word-bearer's moaning chainsword. The chainsword is kicking out exhaust fumes of blood and tissue fibre from its fresh kills. The augmented gauntlet, sizzling with force, shatters the grip and blade drivers of the chainsword, seizing its function. The traitor marine discards his broken sword and fires his bolt pistol. The round explodes against the side of Grievous's helm, throwing him sideways into the gateway wall. The marine steps forward to put a second shot into him. Ventanus's bolter roars, and the word-bearer takes one hit in the throat and another in the chest. The twin impacts stagger him backwards, spalling slivers of armour off him in a cloud like ice chips. Blood pours through the ruptures. The word-bearer sags against the gate wall, bubbles of blood aspirating through his mouthguard. He tries to raise his pistol again. Bentanis's clip is spent. He clamps the bolter, bringing the power sword home with both hands. He finishes the wounded, swaying word-bearer with a brutal, scything, zigzag slash. The upper part of the cut goes sideways through the faceplate, the lower return through the abdomen, clean to the backbone. Clutching his almost bisected waist, the word-bearer buckles. Bentanis turns in time to meet a third. The assault marine rushes him. Bentanis notices there are grim figures etched and marked on the word-bearer's shoulder guards and gibberish litanies inscribed down the length of his body plates. It is the heraldry of the insane. Bentanis blocks the chainsword swing with his blade. More sparks dance. The chain blade, a two-handed monster, chatters as it bites against the energized edge of the power sword. They break. Bentanis parries the next stroke, blocks another, and then runs his blade, tip-first, clean through his adversary's gut. The stab misses the spine, but the end of the blade merges through the plating above the word-bearer's left hip. Bentanis attempts to slide the blade out, but it's stuck. Nor is his opponent dead. He swings for Bentanis again, and Bentanis is forced to evade as the chainsword mutters towards his face. He has to let go of his sword and leave it impaling the warrior's abdomen. The word-bearer lunges at him, set on finishing the contest. He's wielding the massive chainsword two-handed, stroking left and right in an attempt to catch the now unarmed ultramarine. A Skitari warrior leaps to Ventanus's defence, but the word-bearer cleaves him in half in a swirling red haze. Open-handed, Ventanus leaps at him, tackling him bodily to the ground while his chainsword is still tearing through the Mechanicum Solia. Pinning the word-bearer's right arm so the brute can't make a swing across his body, Ventanus punches his confined enemy in the head repeatedly. After three blows, the helmet buckles slightly. A fourth fractures part of the gorget. A fifth crazes a visor lens. The word-bearer roars, throwing Ventanus off him. Ventanus allows himself to be knocked clear. He has regained his grip on the hilt of his power sword. He wrenches it out of the word-bearer, sideways. Grievous, his head streaming gore, isn't finished. He has risen again, throwing aside his ruptured, ruined helm. He has recovered a bolt pistol and is firing it past Ventanus. The fourth of the assaulters is cleaving his way through army regulars and Skitari. Aruk and the largest of the heavyweight Skitari have retrenched. They open up with their plasma inbuilds and slice the traitor apart. Ventanus hears Grievous yelling tactical commands to rally the head of the bridge and drive back the storm force. They're holding, but the line's going to break. Hundreds of cultists and word-bearers are on the bridge, and some are actually swarming up the slopes of the ditch. The defenders on the walls can't get an angle of fire steep enough. Celoton arrives with several more of the Ultramarines' contingent. He moves in to support Grievous at the bridge. Ventanus reloads his bolt gun and takes a place in the line. The force of fire now being directed at the palace gate and frontage is immense. Men are being felled by the hail. They are even being hit and killed by the stone shrapnel, kicked up by shots striking the wall.
"I have a signal,"
Aruk yells to Ventanus over the din.
"A new signal. Relay it. Inbound force of 13th Legion, requesting position specifics."
"Challenge them," Ventanus orders. "Ask them the number of the painted Eldar." Aruk sends the message.
"Reply,"
he says.
"The number is 12. Message continues, as anyone will tell you."
He looks at Ventanus. Droplets of blood from dozens of bodies bead his golden armour. His defective red eye ebbs and flares.
"Captain,"
he asks.
"Response."
"The correct answer is 13, says Ventanus.
He takes a deep breath.
"Supply them with the coordinates and tell them that time is not on our side."
Mark 9.44.12. The demon has a beak. It has a beak and feathers, and hundreds of vestigial limbs that end in hooves. But its body, all 30 tons of it, is that of a serpent, a fat, bloated constrictor. A space marine could stand with his arms outstretched and not match the diameter of its scaled girth. It emerges from the vault shadows to the side of the prep chamber, spooling its vast, swaying bulk up through a massive deck hatch that leads into a magazine store. Thiel realizes how the crushed carpet of victims was manufactured. The vast beak clacks. Thiel sees that secondary snake bodies, dozens of them, form a beard, a frill under the chin of the beak. They writhe like tentacles, like pseudopods. The demon is 100 giant snakes fused into one titanic abomination, sharing one beaked head. Bormaris rakes with his heavy bolter, and Zabo spears scalding flame. The demon snake rears back and then lashes out with its frilled head. The beak catches one of the squad, a battle brother called Domnis, and shears him in a line from the groin to the left shoulder. Empion wades in, unflinching, circling his thunderhammer to gather momentum. The demon snake strikes at him, and he meets the strike, turning its beak aside with a staggering blow. The impact shakes the chamber and causes a pop of overpressure. The beak is cracked. Ichor trickles out. Thiel strides in to support the chapter master, and when the demon snake strikes again, it is greeted by the hammer and the electromagnetic longsword. The hammer connects above the bridge of the massive beak and deconstructs a brittle avian eye socket. Simultaneously, Thiel runs his longsword's razor edge up the rising belly and throat under the beard of secondary tails. The sword parts white scaled flesh and opens bright pink meat and transparent bone. Internal pink sacs, swirled with white fat, burst, and an alimentary canal ruptures. The demon snake rears, its beak wide. Its secondary snake bodies and vestigial hooves thrash and spasm furiously. Partially digested, dismembered parts of human beings and space marines spatter out of the deep, gutting wound Thiel has delivered. The body parts spew wide in an outrush of gastric fluid. The ultramarines can all hear a colossal booming noise. It is the demon's immense tail end, still coiled in the magazine below, thrashing in pained frenzy against the metal walls of the compartment. The demon slides back through the hatch to escape its tormentors.
"The hatch! Close the hatch!"
Zabo yells. He has a locked string of 10 frag grenades in his hand. As Empion punches the hatch control, Zabo arms one and lobs the whole string into the deck hatch. The hatch is almost shut when the grenades go off. The blast jams the hatch a few centimetres from full closure, and the narrow slit focuses the contained blast pressure into a tight, extreme geyser of flame and debris that jets up and burns out across the chamber ceiling. The booming stops. Empion glances at Thiel.
"Every door, a new horror," he says.
"And every moment, a moment lost," Thiel replies. "It is not the last time they will echo this call and return. It is not the last compartment of the flagship they will have to clear a path through."